The following episode of Footy Prime the Podcast contains violence, coarse language, talking of shite, full frontal nudity, and adult scenes. Listener discretion is advised. BetMGM, the place for soccer in Canada, presents Footy Prime.
Oh, let's go!
Footy, footy, it's time to get this party started. It's the footy, footy, it's time to get this party started. With Danny, Jimmy, Gregor, Andy, Jim, and JC. All we know and all we talk about is footy, footy. It's time to get this party started tonight.
BetMGM, the place for soccer in Canada, presents Footy Prime, and it's the first of many. Here we go, people. World Cup Daily begins. It's been a long time coming, years in fact, but here we are. World Cup week. Craig Forrest joins us. Amy Walsh joins us. Daniele Wongerton, otherwise known as Dan Wong, joins us. There's JC lurking in the weeds. No Jimmy Brennan today, but I'm James Sharman. It feels good, doesn't it? There's a buzz. There's a buzz starting, Craig Forrest. You're in the thick of it downtown. You're feeling good about this? Does Toronto realize?
I think so. I think we're there. I've seen football jerseys everywhere. Not just Canadian ones. They were saying, was that Canadian? Yeah, lots of Canadians. Saw a Kone jersey this morning. But there are lots of international jerseys going on and everybody's pulling them out of the closet. Yeah, there's a buzz starting for sure.
Are these jerseys legitimate jerseys, or are they found from some dodgy warehouse in the suburbs and they're not actually authentic FIFA sanctioned jerseys? Well, and we as the fans are stealing from the governing body, our overlords.
Yes, how dare we?
How dare we not spend $265 on a t-shirt? How dare we? Yeah, that by the way was ridiculous. I mean, I know we talked about it a little bit last week on the podcast, but the fact is those dodgy soccer shirt stores have been around forever. And you can always get a dodgy soccer shirt from somewhere. But then FIFA show up and suddenly it's really important. Oh, better make a bust.
Yeah, like but what was it? What was it again? Like $265 for
for a regular.
No. But they even do knockoffs of their own knockoffs, right?
Right. Yeah.
They go, hey, this is the authentic. But then they're like, hey, this one, the 140 is this. So I'm kind of like, but you mean they're ripping off themselves? it's a little odd. So just going to say, you guys have done it, FIFA. FIFA, you've done it. You've managed to squeeze every penny out of this tournament. Congratulations, FIFA.
Yeah. Well, we've talked a lot about what makes us authentic as fans and will we ever get to a point where we are a true soccer nation? I think having a real underbelly of soccer in terms of a resale market and shady stuff going on, maybe we're onto something here, Canada. Maybe we've made it.
Maybe. Does that make us a soccer nation? A real, real soccer might. Football nation?
Yes, cases and boxes of fake shirts. Yes. The key to it all along was an underbelly.
Counterfeit black market. There, we are now a soccer nation.
Yeah.
That's hilarious.
I was in the Eaton Center yesterday, and obviously there's an Adidas store, there's a Nike store, and the Adidas store is just plastered with every single nationality. And I heard somebody say, where's Canada? Right? Because everybody's Adidas, right? It's like, well, you got to go down to the Nike store down there.
That is true, right? People don't realize how that the kit deals work. So, you know, depending on what store you're in, that's where you're going to find Argentina or in England or wherever. And you can't find Canada. Actually, I think England's Nike as well, I think. But I think it's the last year Germany has Adidas as their manufacturer, I believe. Mm. That's always been a connection for forever, Adidas and the German national team. But here we are. Canada wasn't wearing T-shirts when they arrived last night at Billy Bishop Airport. They're wearing some pretty swanky suits and swanky personalized luggage. I'm surprised no one's complained about it yet.
From Le Chateau.
Oh. All the money's going to suits and luggage. No wonder we can't win any games. I'm waiting for that. Because it wasn't long ago that the suit gate was a big issue. What was it, 3 years ago now?
But that was just after DeVos mentioned bankruptcy in our federation in the same breath. So you can understand that. Yeah.
Yeah, because the execs, the board got all these nice new suits and people freaked out about it. But now they're wearing suits and they're looking pretty good. Of note, and it's a weird Sunday, wasn't it? It was a weird Sunday. Early in the morning, news broke through numerous reports from reporters who we trust and get things right all the time, that Moise Bembido, our greatest fears have been realized. Moise Bembido, our burgeoning centre-back star, one of the, if not the most important members of this squad, had indeed failed in his attempt to make this squad due to that broken leg recovery. We've been talking about Moise since October when he broke his leg playing for Nice. Mm-hmm. Would he recover in time? Is it broken leg? Should be back in time for sure. Everyone was speaking positively. And then it dragged on and it dragged on. And he gets into training camp and he doesn't look himself. He's not in full training. He gets half an hour against Uzbekistan, comes off early. He's limping, ice pack on there. Hasn't really trained properly since. What's happening? So the reports are he ain't going to make it. He's done. And then literally Jesse Marsh leaps off the plane in front of the microphones and says, no, he's still here. We're giving him to the last possible time. Dubs, what's happening here? He's not playing, is he? This is just gamesmanship.
I think it is a little bit of jockeying, a little bit of managing that narrative, which Jesse Marsh said they were kind of at the helm of, that they were dictating what their narrative was, and it was overwhelmingly positive. Well, that's fine, but you've got your blinders on a little bit, right? And you're trying to keep the noise out. That's what you do. It's a very insular experience. You want to keep everybody out. But the reality of the situation was plain to see in the 30 minutes that Moise Bembido got versus Uzbekistan, that there's one thing to have rust, which he had immediately to his left in Derek Cornelius. You can shake that off over the course of a really rigorous, intense training camp, which we know that they have with Jesse Marsh, even though they had their eyes set on June 12th, and with a little bit of reps, some time, and the 90 minutes that he got versus Ireland as well. So that's possible that you can come out of that. You can emerge on the other side. But when you're managing an injury like Moise had, where stress fracture initially, and then a break to the same leg, and you think, as you just said, quite straightforward. It's a leg break, very little complications, let's go. And they also had an example in what Tejon Buchanan went through at Copa America. Pretty straightforward recovery, takes a little bit of time to regain your footing, and then you're back again. It hasn't been that with Moise. And so I think the stark reality of the situation was midweek when we were at Stade Saputo. He's in his running shoes. He's not taking part in training. He's not even at the stadium for match day minus one. I think the writing was on the wall. So it's to nobody's surprise. Yes, you're gutted for the player. I think it's a real disappointment for the team because he's critical to the way that they want to play, that pace in the back line. But I think it was what everybody expected. So then to hear Jesse Marsh try to control that and shape it, yes, it's support of his player, give him to the last possible moment. But it doesn't really make a whole lot of sense to me. And I'll just finish with this. It evoked what Carolina Marache in 2011 tried to do in managing Christine Sinclair and her injury. Will she or won't she participate? And there was so much energy and focus put on that. I'm not saying that's why they finished last at the 2011 Women's World Cup, but it was almost too much energy, too much emphasis on something that they couldn't ultimately control. So I worry here with Jesse Marsh backing his player, backing his group, which he always does, that you're taking the focus away from the guys who really matter, who you're going to lean on heavily on June 12th and over the course of your group play.
But is there a chance, Craig, that he can see enough progress this week to get in there? Or do you concur with Dubs there that this has been decided? He's not going to make it. We're just going to kind of string this along a little bit longer.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think there's a little bit of both there. There's probably a 5% chance they're hanging on to the fact that he might be okay. But other than that, I think the decision's probably just about done.
I mean, even if he is, you know, suddenly has this miraculous recovery, the rust factor is still there. He's not training or hasn't trained properly for a long time. And you have, I mean, listen, we'll get to replacement. Presumably it'll be a Ralph Parisot, who I'm sure he knows, he's got clarity. I'm sure Ralph has been told, you know, train as if you're playing because you're probably going to be in this squad. Maybe not starting, but you're going to be in this squad. But yeah, you're right. There's a lot of noise around this that I don't know is necessary. It sucks. I mean, as far as the whole gut punchometer, this is right up there. If you told us, you know, 6 months ago, yeah, you know what, Moyes wouldn't recover in time, we'd be, you know, the Canadian soccer zeitgeist would be
it's a
weeping,
different podcast.
Crying. It's a
different the, podcast. The zeitcast.
It's not a bad idea, actually. It was like,
really? It's not bad. It's really a pop good. Culture one. It's
everything that's buzzworthy.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, you know, we'd be devastated. Like, really? I mean, of all the players, he's right up there as the most important. So
Can I put a weird little spin to this one, too?
Please.
Only because Jesse Marsh has always been so clear and transparent. And then Matthew Schenetti from TSN broke the news that Bombito wouldn't be playing. So not naming names. Everyone knew it was Matt. And I'm wondering if, not that there's more behind it, but if Matthew found it out through some other means and Jesse didn't want that coming out, this is a way for him to take control of the story again and just going, look, we're still waiting. We're giving every second to, without it changing much of the narrative. And then he kind of grabs control, puts it back on himself, yeah, and less about the players. And I'm going to just pull in, and I'm not saying I'm right. I'm just going to pull in one of the comments. This is from Mr. Nice and Smooth, and it's about Fonzie, but it has to do with like who's playing too. And it's also from our friend DJ Knox. I picked Mr. Nice and Smooth because it's such a great name and a great handle for YouTube.
It's a bit disturbing.
Wow.
I like it.
I mean, I'm thinking full body wax here. I'm thinking if it was Miss Nice and Smooth, different entirely.
You're thinking Nice and Smooth, man from Atlantis. You're like, no, it's all streamlined, good swimmer.
Okay, so, controlling the narrative, though. Like, we're already awaiting a really nice message here because he's Mr. Nice.
Well, he says, say Fonzie Alphonso Davies for the Switzerland match. Even if he is technically ready earlier, you could say the same thing about Bombito almost. And then from our friend DJ Knox, Asa is the first pundit, and this refers to Asa Roman, who's our West Coast correspondent, but he doesn't know yet because I didn't reach out to him. Asa is the first pundit I've heard speaking sense about Davies. Canada's men's team, Marsh, need to get your shizzle together and go out and win your first two matches without Davies and Bombito and maybe even Ahmed. And things set up good for matches 3 through 5 or 6. Simple. Also take it easy with Larea and promise David too. So I found that very kind of insightful about, hey, let's just get along and do this. There has to be a level of that. And that's why I'm thinking maybe Jesse has just kind of grabbed the narrative back and said, we don't know what's going on. We're letting him stay right to the last minute. I'll make that decision and it's on me. Done.
Yeah, there has to be a level of pragmatism on the inside as well, right? Yeah. Between Jesse, the technical staff, what they're seeing, the eye test, Moyes clearly didn't pass it, and what the medical staff are telling him. But then also backing your player. So maybe it's Moyes that's come to him, maybe, and I'm speculating here, after that breaks and says, hang on a minute. Like, I have up until, you know, Thursday at 3 p.m. to prove to you that I'm ready or I'm not ready. And then I have full trust in whoever's going to be slotted in instead of me. But give me that window to at least get there. And Jesse might think, okay, it's not possible, but he's at least going to give his player a chance. And the other thing I wanted to say to your point about Matthew Schenetti, I feel like he gets burned in this a little bit. But as the rights holder, he's still a reporter. He's embedded with the team, but he still has, you know, his onus as a reporter, as a journalist, right? So I have a hard time believing that he sends this tweet out, not that it needs to get approved by Canada Soccer Comms, but I imagine there are some sort of checks and balances that are happening you know, that are slightly covert or part of that underbelly between the comms and the reporters. Not that he has to get approval from
them. Mean the stuff we don't have ever, Dubs?
Right. But there's some sort of facilitating there so that he, as the rights holder reporter, is the first to break this story. That's engineered in a sense. And again, purely speculating here, I have no information about this. So it just seems a little bit bizarre that he's being put in his place by Jesse Marsh. That's all I'll say about it.
Yeah, it's a great point. I mean, listen, I trust Matt's reporting 100%. Mm-hmm. This is weird. This
is strange.
As a rights holder, you know, Matt's closer than anyone to this team, has been for years now, going back to the last World Cup. So Matt's a pro. I will love to have a beer with him at some point and say, okay, what actually happened there? Because I bet he's pissed. I bet he's pissed off. And has every right to be pissed off. But quite honestly, who cares from a Canadian perspective?
Yeah, it doesn't change.
Do you think Canada scares? This for us, this is great. Often the week leading up to the World Cup can be actually be a little bit bland because the clubs, the teams go into themselves. You're not getting much from them. You're just waiting for that first game. We've got a great thing to talk about here. So firstly, thank you, Jesse Marsh, for giving us content. But do you think Jesse or the team care about this? Craig, they don't care. Moyes Bembido knows where he's at. He knows if he's in this squad or not by now. Jesse Marsh knows if he's in this squad or not, despite what they say about this 24-hour thing. And Ralph Piso knows whether he's in this squad or not. That's all that matters here. Mm-hmm. What the fans and the media think is irrelevant. Did I swear, by the way?
No, you said pee off, but I don't know if that's a swear.
Okay. Yeah. No. Okay.
Yeah.
Just make sure you don't even realize anymore.
No, I don't exactly. but Craig, I mean that you've been entrenched in teams leading up to tournaments. You know what's going on, even if the media doesn't.
Yeah, you do. And there's always going to be something leak out as well, and you're going to get little tidbits here and there. And the teams will try to keep that as isolated as they possibly can for information. That's going to be a challenge throughout. But that's all part of tournament football and managing tournament football, is managing not only what's on the field, but the stuff that's going on around it. It can be really intense, really intense. I mean, from a player standpoint, remember, even just to talk about intensity and build up to tournaments, is that all these, you know, everything from family phoning up about tickets and organizing these sort of things, this is all sort of distractions that you don't really need. So it'll be interesting to see how they deal with that and how they can keep the team as isolated as they possibly can from even family and friends. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I imagine family and friends can be a right pain in the butt for a lot of these
people. Oh, they're the worst. Like,
oh my God, leave us alone.
But it's true, though, to a certain degree. This is an additional thing on their plate and plays into the pressure of having a home World Cup. It's the expectations, it's the fans, it's all of that that's put on you, but it's also managing expectations of people that expect to see you during the day. Come have lunch with us, or come out here and like meet us in the lobby and do this. And that's a lot to kind of figure out and to navigate as a player as well. Mm-hmm.
And not that this is anything like that, but when I used to have to go visit my mother in New Brunswick and my parents in New Brunswick, everyone had said, oh, did you get to Charlottetown? Did you get to Halifax? Yeah. And I'm like, no, I spent a week in Bay St. Anne in New Brunswick fighting mosquitoes. There was no, I'm going off on 2 days. You stay where you are. And the expectation is, you're giving them 7 days, 24/7, all across, you know, it literally is a 24-hour visit, and you're helping around the house. You know, you get 1 day to relax. And so I imagine with these tournament players, they're in the hotel getting texts, and it's like one of your buddies, and you feel like you have to answer that, even though you don't want to, and your mom and your dad, and you're like, I don't want to answer this today. Mm-hmm.
Well, having just come off the road for about 10 days covering Canada, away from my family, it was great. it was thoroughly enjoyable. You know?
Did you get a big welcome?
A little bit underwhelming.
Okay, so for people out there in SiriusXM land, Joe and Tony are the daughter and wife, respectively, for James Sharman. And he speaks of them often and refers to them often. I just wanted to give you some context. So as you're listening to on Sirius XM, that is now you've got some context.
They're fond of me. That might be as far as it goes. You know, the dog was happy. The cats didn't give two dams, but I'm off again in a few days' time to Vancouver. We'll see. We'll see if the fondness improves. But yeah, it's a valid point. At the same time, these players want some escape from the 24/7 football as well, right? So there's going to be a balance there, you know. But that home world—what World Cup was it where the WAGS term, wife and girlfriends, was born in English football? And I think it was under Sven-Göran Eriksson, that gong show, and he allowed the WAGS to stay with the players. I think it was, and you wondered why the team underperformed. They looked exhausted. Can't imagine why, right? So there's that, but this is very much, I think, going to be, let's separate the players. Because a home World Cup is different, right? And you talk about the expectations on this team. The fact that it is a home World Cup does add, obviously, a lot to the plate, more pressure, but also gives them a better chance to get results in these games. Against Ireland on Friday, the last time we saw Canada before the World Cup, really good 45 minutes, not a great second half. Mm-hmm. So I think overall, Dubs, Jesse Marsh was satisfied with the game. He saw a lot that he liked. Mm-hmm. But there were still some concerns, and they were brought up in the media. And I know Jesse didn't want to touch on anything negative in that press conference. But goal scoring is clearly a problem again.
Yeah.
Is that the biggest concern? Outside the injuries and who may or may not be healthy, is who's going to score goals for this team? Is that the biggest concern entering Bosnia-Herzegovina on Friday?
I think it's the most glaring one, but I think it's just managing our expectations. Like, as soon as we found out that Italy wasn't coming out of that UEFA playoff and it was going to be Bosnia, all of a sudden, and our own Jimmy Brennan was on that TSN panel. I forget what, I think it was during the March window, right? When that playoff was happening concurrently. And then the panel, which was Jimmy and Kilban and whoever else, convinced themselves that Canada was going to go out and win the group. I think we need to measure our expectations here because of Bombito, because of the health of Alfie Jones. One positive, though, because yes, it is the goal scoring. I don't want to like not answer your question, but the play of Luc de Fougerolles in that match versus Ireland, I think, is something that we can cling to give us some hope and some positivity going into this match, the opening match in the World Cup versus Bosnia, because that to me gave me confidence that Canada can defend well. But the Irish coach was asked about it. Like, Canada's struggling. Like, what's going on here? Like, what do you think teams are going to seek to do in order to beat them, to find those vulnerabilities? And he said, you know, you don't have to do a whole lot of, you know, a deep dive on this team. You watch their last five or six matches. Teams get opportunities in behind on the break. You just have to be patient, and then you have to be clinical in order to finish your opportunities. And that's what we saw Uzbekistan not do in like the first half, where they got two opportunities in behind that it should have been, Canada should have been down 2-0. And then also, can they maintain the tempo? You know, like, they, Ireland sat deep and they frustrated Canada. And I thought you saw a really bright spot in Liam Miller. Everybody was complaining about him. He just needs to be a little bit more clinical. And as Jesse Marsh talked about, that final action, the final pass, the final decision-making. I think there was a lot of positivity in terms of creativity, which is something that we've criticized in the past. It was just the clinical edge that was lacking. So can you solve that in these 3 days? Probably not. But then the composure, I think a lot of these players do have, including Kyle Larin, who a lot of people want off of that starting 11. I think you give him a shot against Bosnia, see what he does. I think if the team can get something from that match, it puts them in really good stead to begin this tournament.
Yeah. That Ireland match actually gave me a lot of hope as far as the actual play goes and controlling large parts of that match. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a concern about finishing an open play. But saying that, I can see where Jesse Marsh is coming from as well, that we'll solve that problem and get it right. But you better, because, I mean, when you look at the Ireland match and totally end up walking away with a draw, well, they probably should have picked up 3 points. Well, you don't want to be doing that, talking about that after the Bosnia match, that you dominated the match and you picked up 1 point. Okay, it's not the end of the world, but you should be sitting on 3 points. You just cannot miss these opportunities when the pressure's on and when it really matters.
Well, they've been talking about, don't worry, there are goals in this team for a long time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Still waiting.
Yeah.
And John David's got a pretty good resume about scoring goals. Not recently, though, for club or country. Scored a couple last window, but there are penalties. But hey, goals are goals. That's fine. Is there a concern about John David, Dubs? I mean, his form? I mean, we haven't seen the best of him in these two most recent warm-ups, despite getting lots of minutes.
No, but the second half versus Uzbekistan was better. But again, that was almost a completely rotated, fresh-legged Canadian side versus a tiring Uzbekistan side. So I think you have to take that into account, but he did look better. And I think when Canada looks their brightest, even against teams like in Ireland who are going to sit a little bit deeper, and that's what teams are going to do to try to beat Canada, when they go vertical, when they go quick on the break, when they regain possession, whether it's in their own half, middle third, or they're attacking and they're able to regain it via the counter press, that's where they look their brightest. That's where they look their most threatening. So of course, yes, the finishing, that is a big issue. But I think they need to be able to capitalize on those opportunities. Like when Kone won the ball at Stade Saputo, just on the edge of probably the defensive third and the middle third, and he went really quick. He beat a player and then he played it to Tejan. And then Tejan was able to cut it back. And I think it was Miller again. I think he had 5 shots on target that match. So yes, Miller has to do better. But the most dangerous Canada looks is when they go quick. That sometimes, though, to your question about John David, leaves him behind. So playing the position, you know, that he's playing, where he's not leading the line, he's not playing that number 9, he's playing a role that is demanding of him out of possession. When Canada do go quick on the break, sometimes he has to catch up to the play. But if they can involve him in those moments, I think that's the key to Canada unlocking their offense.
Yeah, another example of what a crying shame it is about Marcelo Flores not being available. That would have been a great option to play him behind John David, push him further up pitch. So that isn't an issue. But we won't see that until post-World Cup.
Can we talk about that for 1 second? Now that we think Moise Bombito is off the pitch for the World Cup, let's just pretend he is, and Marcelo Flores is done, had his surgery last week. If people are listening in, these are all Canadian players. So get used to it. Get your roster sheet. That's who we'll be referring to. But who's moving into those spots? That's what I'd like to know from who you guys thinking who's going to be next up.
Well, I mean, the fact that... Okay, so now presumably we're looking at 2. If Moyes isn't in the squad, so Ralph Prieto is the natural guy. He's going to get a spot. Mm-hmm. And then I believe it's going to be Jaden Nelson now. They haven't revealed
that's
anyone.
That's what I was wondering.
No.
Okay.
Yeah. And, you know, you have Bessong, but he's a left back. It just makes sense. And Jaden has played really well, given the opportunity he's been given, Craig, the last couple of games.
Yeah.
Especially that first game against Uzbekistan. I think to me, it's not like for like, but that's the natural choice.
I think so. Yeah. Yeah. He's quick and creative, and I think he's done an awful lot. And in these last, certainly the game against Uzbekistan.
And Dubs, just to appease all our Vancouver faithful out there, they'll be so happy to see Jaden Nelson, who was obviously a starring player there before leaving for Austin this offseason. And of course, Ralph.
Mm-hmm.
Man, they love their Ralph, and so they should. And man, that's got some great conversation online for us.
Yeah.
About where he's at in his development.
He's got to be the only Ralph in the tournament, no?
there's Raphael's Ralph.
Yeah,
I mean, there's no Ralph in England and Scotland. If not England or Scotland, probably nowhere else.
You know, it would be great if, like, going back to our conversation to start off the pod, just talking about legitimizing ourselves as like a footballing nation, would be if Ralph went by Ralph on the back of his jersey instead of Prieto. It'd be very Brazilian, very Spanish. We're like, yeah,
there's
we're
been
doing
some
it.
Brazilian players, care. Right, with kind of weird names on their back. Like, remember Fred?
Yeah.
Brilliant. Right. I loved it.
Yeah.
Douglas.
Why not Ralph?
Yeah.
That should
Prieto
be
is kind of a cool name too, though, right? Prieto is a cool name. Oh. It sounds more sophisticated.
True.
Right?
Guess.
I don't know
if
why.
If his name was Smith, Ralph Smith.
Yeah.
But Ralph Prieto sounds cool.
Although whenever I think of Ralph, I think of, I am 16 going on 7. Sound of Music. He was the...
Oh, my God. Oh,
he's, wonder, a, he's a Rolf. He's not a Ralph.
I know, but that's who I think
every
of.
Every show...
Or the dog.
Also the first time
the Muppets dog.
For those listening to the first time on Canada Talks, which might be a very different demographic, perhaps. I hope it is. Because Wonga will drop some references every show, which age him horribly.
Everyone has seen Sound of Music. Come on. Of course.
Well, I haven't.
Have they now, the new generation? No? I hope so. It's a classic.
They show Julie it.
Andrews is a legendary performance in that.
Canadian Christopher Plummer.
No, that's brilliant. Right. Yes.
Right?
I never saw the attraction between the two of them.
Yeah, it was the blonde lady for me. The Baroness. I was always... Yeah.
Oh, the Baroness was...
Yeah.
Yeah, something about her was very alluring.
But maybe it had to do with something that she came in, Julie Andrews did, from the nunnery, right? Like
the nunnery?
The nunnery.
It was nunnery, wasn't it? That's what you call it.
Oh, convent?
Convent, yeah.
Oh, convent, yeah. I think a nunnery is the plural of nuns. A nunnery of nuns.
Correct.
Oh, it could be.
Like a gaggle. Yeah, nunnery.
Yes. Brewery. Where they brew nuns. Yeah.
They just pop nuns out at the brewery. At the
right. Holy water.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Sorry about that. Let's move on to the bulk segment of this daily show. Hey, JC, do you have it lined up? Some really big questions?
Mm. 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4.
Ring, ring, what's that sound? Big question that needs answer. Ring.
What was the question again?
I wonder what Canada Talks think of us right now. We've been somewhat on the rails so far, actually, in fairness.
Yes, we have.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I mean, we just before that, we were tempting fate a little bit. We're kind of going in a certain direction.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we'll bring it back on track to the World Cup here. But if you are listening for the first time on Canada Talks, this is kind of what you get with us. So just...
Please come back.
please come back. It's really important to us.
Every day, 2 p.m.
So I've got some really big questions ahead of this week of the World Cup kicking off. The first one is back to Canada. Really, but can the high press and this high tempo succeed at this World Cup with the potential heat? Not just for Canada, but the overall for some of these teams that play a certain way. Because traditionally speaking, international football, Craig, is a little bit more tactical, strategic, slow-paced. Yeah. But that's not how Jesse Marsh plays. Now I think it's going to be right now around 30 on Friday for Canada.
Yeah,
only three stadiums. Sorry,
I did the math. So just so everyone knows, if you're listening in the States, it's going to be 27 degrees centigrade. So you define what that is for Fahrenheit. You double it. This is what my dad told me. You double it. So 54, you take 10% away. So 5. So 49 plus 32. So it's going to be 81 degrees.
I've lost interest.
What a
look. Really?
Just because you don't know math.
Wear a tank top.
You don't know math. 81 degrees out and sunny and humid is what they're calling for. Just so everybody knows.
So heat might play a factor is what you're saying.
Yes.
Well, because the Irish coach on Friday was asked, how do you beat Canada? And he mentioned, he was very diplomatic, but he said, listen, the way they play that on the front foot, that tempo, they're going to tire. And we saw that on Friday late in the game. Jesse Marsh then responded by saying, listen, you know, this is an exhibition match, essentially, friendly, that we're using also for conditioning. So we went at it for 90 minutes. We won't do that at games that matter, Dubs. He said, listen, you know, there'll be time. There'll be breaks within the game where we take our foot off the gas. There's going to be hydration breaks twice a match, once each half of 3 minutes. So there will be opportunity for these players to rest, but the weather's going to play a role. I think only three stadiums are climate controlled in this World Cup, just the three. And we saw last summer at the Club World Cup, it did cause a problem for a lot of teams, back then. So yeah, can you play this style successfully, Dubs, throughout an entire tournament if you want to go deep, given the conditions?
I'm going to say yes, and that's glass half full, but this team doesn't really know how to play another way. Jesse Marsh has been criticized for not having a plan B or C or double Z, right? Like back to that, those questions, I think in the fall in one of the windows. So in order for Canada to have success, they have to double down on this formula, which is high press, it's aggressive, it's high tempo. And I think you do have a depth of squad, despite these injuries, which are the big question marks, I think, for Canada getting out of the group and going on a deep run or going a little bit further, round of 32, round of 16. You have to play the style. You have to do it and you have to be able to execute. And executing, to me, depends more on goal scoring than it does, executing and be able to perform consistently over 90 minutes, a high tempo, high pressing style.
Hmm. Craig?
I think you're going to have to, depending on the games and what's going on, I don't expect anything to be too hot out in Vancouver, but it could be, obviously warm for the opener. I think we saw them try some different things in these warm-up games where they weren't really pressing as hard as they possibly could. I don't know if that was by design because of what could be happening with the temperature and how they might adapt a little bit. But if it's really hot, keeping up that tempo for the 90 minutes is going to be interesting, to say the least. But I'll go along with what Dub says. That's what they know how to do. I think one way or the other, from a neutral's point of view, I think Canada is going to be as exciting as any team you'll see in the World Cup. Mm-hmm. For a good or bad, like whether that's a good thing or not, it's going to be worth watching.
Well, let's talk about neutral. Love you, Craig. This is from our friend Dan Birch. Love you, Craig, but why are you wearing a Switzerland shirt? They're in our group. I'm a massive sweet tooth, and right now I'm checking my chocolate closely to make sure I don't eat any Swiss chocolate by accident. Did you lose a bet? So last show, Craig was wearing a Switzerland shirt. So I think it's more about who's sharing kits with you, right? Who's sending you kits? Is that basically it?
Well, yeah. And, I want these countries to come here and feel really comfortable, we're going to show a lot of love here and all that kind of stuff. And I hope they just come and enjoy themselves and walk out of here with no points.
It's also one of the only shirts. Yeah, that's perfect. It's probably one of the only kits that fit properly still, right? From your playing days.
It was a little baggy.
Yeah, and really with all the ecrus and beiges that Forrest has in his closet, there's nothing that's more neutral than a Switzerland kit.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I thought.
But there are holes in it.
It's true. Well, hopefully for Canada, we'll be able to capitalize on that.
Maybe. I don't know. Switzerland's a pretty good team.
Yeah, let's hope Canada doesn't need anything when it rolls around to Switzerland, at least to get out of the group, right?
Yeah. I mean, Switzerland, all their players are based in Europe, not necessarily in hot climates. So it's going to affect everyone. As a player, Dubs, would you like a 3-minute break midway through each half?
The fact that it's kind of set, I think, changes it a little bit. You have to wrap your head around it because, listen, when you play the game, we know all of these rules by IFAB and FIFA are trying to insert themselves to increase the fluidity of the game, to eliminate all of this time wasting. But it's sort of inherent to the way the game is played. And in order to manage a game properly, you have to be used to wrapping your head around these types of things. So it's going to be a slight shift for the players to get accustomed to that. But I think it's going to benefit a team like Canada, to your earlier question about the high tempo, high pressing, aggressive nature of football that we want to play. It gives those players that built-in rest, as you said, but it's also an opportunity to insert some tactical tweaks to maybe like, okay, these are their triggers. These are the traps that we want to set, and we're going to adapt it a little bit. We're going to sit a little bit deeper. But you saw versus Uzbekistan, and it was maybe because you had Bombido and Cornelius playing those center back positions, but they were getting drawn out by their number nine or like a forward who was dropping into the midfield, making it so easy to get in behind. So if you get a break midway through the second half, you haven't been punished for it up until that point, where you adapt. You knit together, whether it's Eustachio or Kone, to drop a little bit deeper, to take care of those players so that you're not creating gaping holes the size of Swiss cheese in your backline.
Well, I mean, it's from a tactical standpoint too, right? Great opportunity for the coach to get your players together. I mean, they're trying to do away with time wasting. For example, the goalkeeper tactical injuries, there, no more of that. You can't gather around the coach to get your instructions from the coach while the goalkeeper's being treated, which Canada did a lot, by the way. Remember Milan Boyan in the last season? Oh my God. Every game he had a bad ankle. Every game at about the 80-minute mark.
He was masterful, though, at it.
Yeah,
because there's a certain force. You can speak to this. Like there's a little bit of play acting or a lot of play acting that's involved, right? Because if you do it half-heartedly, you're going to be found out. So you have to be genuine. You have to be method, right? If you're going to be a goalkeeper and you're doing this tactical kind of gamesmanship, you know, so that your team can benefit from it. You're still going to see it in different ways.
Milan Boyan sold it well because there was a couple times I thought his career was over.
I know. And the sweatpants. Remember the sweatpants?
Love he kept a, you know why he wore the sweatpants? Because he kept a pack of smokes in there. You know that he was like...
It's true. Yeah.
But Dubs, I was wondering about this, you know, the weather and the water break. You were an engine player, right? Mm-hmm. You weren't the fastest, but, you know, 45, well... You're 800 runner.
No, I was 800 meter.
Yeah, so you would start showing your strength, you know, 58 minutes in, all that kind of, or late in the first half. All of a sudden, that might be taken away. And to your point, like Canada's and its press with this 3-minute break, that's revival. Like that is a full time to go, hey, I'm a whole new player again. 3 minutes of just chugging water and feeling better? No?
Well, I mean, it's only just 3 minutes, though.
Yeah, but it's 3 minutes that you're not... If you're a sprinter, it's a big deal.
That's true. So I think it depends on the type of player that you are.
Yeah.
But for players, and I think you saw the French team put through their paces much the way we saw Canada do, you know, the one where they're running around the field and then you have to do it in a certain amount of time and there are all kinds of variations to that fitness test. And I think the French national team was doing some variation of the beep test. And you saw some guys who just are able to do it in their sleep. It's just something that they do naturally. It's innate that they have that engine and they have that, what's the word I'm looking for? That endurance, right? Mm. Versus a sprinter that might be very difficult for them. So I actually look at that as it is going to benefit you in terms of your tactics, in terms of anything that your coach has to say to you, in terms of your adjustments that way and the way you're managing the game. But from a physical standpoint, it might be more challenging. Because I'm in a groove, I'm in a rhythm, and then I'm being pulled out of it. Sometimes it's more difficult to get yourself back into the game and you feel your legs more as a player like me who's like marshalling the middle of the park and I'm likely to stay on. If I'm starting the match, I'm likely to be a 90-minute player. So it might affect those players a little bit negatively versus giving them a little bit of a boost.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And then also just when you look at other sports, like basketball, for instance, Wonger, that you know we're very well, a timeout can change the momentum of the match like you never known. Like, so it could work in your favor, hydration break when the other team's on the front foot, or it might not work that way because you're pushing and pressing and looking for something.
Yeah, and I just think of the players who carry a heavy load in basketball, how big a timeout is. Like it literally is, you can go from being the guy who's dragging his ass on the court to back to normal within that 2-minute break. That's why I'm like, you know, for someone who's quicker, someone who uses their speed more, and Canada has or had, I hope we still do, but we have a lot of speed merchants. And I think that's important, that 25-minute break or 25-minute stop time for 3 minutes for the water. I think that's going to be important for Canada. I think it may change games.
I'm not sure whether the conditions were any reason for this, but yesterday we saw another really concerning moment for Christian Eriksen, who collapsed in the pitch with Denmark playing against Ukraine. This is a player that, if you remember back at Euros 2021 against Finland, collapsed, his heart stopped on the pitch. And he had a procedure afterwards. He has essentially a pacemaker, I think, essentially is what it is. In place, he's played ever since. And remember that day, it was a dark day for football. It was a horrible day. Mm-hmm. And then yesterday, we actually had a pre weekly meeting for Footy Prime because we're so organized.
The
news began. It was maybe the first, maybe the last. But The news began to trickle down during that meeting, and I know all of us who we're pretty, there's a lot of levity in those meetings, but it was drained from the meeting like, oh my God. Now, thankfully he's conscious. It seems like the pacemaker kicked in.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm clearly, we're no doctors here. I had a friend who had a similar procedure and a pacemaker. He actually collapsed on the hockey bench playing hockey and was out for a few minutes, had the same, very similar procedure to Erickson, and his actually pacemaker went off last year playing hockey again, and he was thrown to the ice, and he said it's like being hit in the chest with a sledgehammer, and it did its job. Right, it saved his life. Now, not to say this is the same thing, it seems quite similar though, but for Christian Erickson, you know, a legend of Danish football and a Denmark team that, you know, always hopes he can make a bit of noise at this tournament, I mean, that is what a dreadful way, Craig, to kick off their campaign.
Yeah, yeah. What did they play, about 75 minutes, abandon the game against Ukraine, I believe it was?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, horrible. But obviously it could have been a hell of a lot worse by the sounds of things. So I'm glad he's okay. They put out a statement saying he's feeling pretty good about it. So as far as his football career goes, I mean, that's irrelevant. As long as he personally is okay and going to be healthy moving forward, but I'm not sure about his football situation.
Well, it was, I know yesterday when we were talking in our meeting, Sharms and I were watching, I don't know if Craig was, but I mentioned that we saw it live on television in 2021. And like a lot of people, it was very upsetting. And it was, to see someone in the kind of the prime of life just drop, which happened yesterday too, you know, it's much bigger than football. It's much bigger than anything that's going, you know, because it's so immediate and it's right in your face. So quite upsetting. And I just hope that he gets the help and it's determined how they can fix him if he wants to continue. But I think this would be, hey man, this might be the last of your, the last run you make, meaning, you know, they're not going to put it out there. I mean, insurance wise, Craig, would they even be able to insure him anymore?
Good question. Good question. I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a difficult situation, but I can't see any doctor being brave enough to say you'll be fine over the next month.
Mm-hmm. No.
No.
Well, I mean, even his teammates, you don't want to see him out there, do you?
No. You heard the Danish doctor afterwards say the pacemaker did its job,
yeah,
which is great for this time. But do you want any subsequent time to be on your watch? Not because you're going to be held responsible, but because you care about the human being. And I can imagine that his family, his teammates, his coaches, everybody that, you know, is close to him, they're probably having those conversations that, you know, football is a huge part of his life. And you obviously want to facilitate and support him as long as he wants to pursue it. But sometimes that, you know, balance shifts a little bit and your life is the most important thing. Right. So it's awful. And you can just imagine like the trauma, you know, those Danish players reliving that and then seeing him collapse again. And then, you know, they will have to contend with that. So they'll be, you know, as much as we talk about the medical science and like the physical preparation around these teams, how advanced it is and how sophisticated it is, unfortunately, the mental performance and the psychological support for these footballers is not on par. So you hope that all of those players and Erickson himself, his family, everybody who's in immediate kind of proximity to him, that they get that type of support. And he does as well, whatever he decides for his future.
He's 34, right? He's had an incredible career. You know, this is different to a kid who's 23, who's still got his career ahead of him, right?
Someone whistling.
I heard that too. That was weird. Yeah. But yeah, he's 34, right? So, I mean, I hadn't really thought about his teammates, those moments that he dropped and was on the pitch and was unconscious. just what went through their minds. I know the game was canceled, right? They stopped playing the match, understandably. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it just brought back some really, really awful memories from 2021. Anyway, moving on. I was thinking about pressure in this World Cup, right? Mm-hmm. Like, what is there one player that's under the most pressure at this World Cup? Do you think, as unfair as it is, do you think it's Ronaldo?
That's mine.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, but, you go but on.
We're just simply, this is probably his last World Cup. But who knows with this guy? There's a lot of people out there who watch a lot of Portuguese football and think, okay, listen, he obviously is in the squad. He shouldn't be starting games anymore. They play differently with Ronaldo in the and it's a really good squad, Portugal. Excellent squad. They could go a long way in this tournament with or without him. But he wants this more than anyone. If there's one player that wants a World Cup, it's probably Ronaldo. Because he knows his arch rival, the evil Leo Messi, has his trophy, his medal in the cabinet. Is it, Craig, is it Ronaldo under more pressure than any other player?
Probably because he's going to put himself under that pressure. I think he will. And he lives for it, as we know. The fact that he's actually in this tournament at his age is quite spectacular. But they do have very strong side. But I don't know about pressure the most. I mean, certainly we would be saying it was Messi if he didn't win the World Cup last time. Mm-hmm.
But I think it would be, I think the Americans might have a lot of pressure. So a Pulisic would, this could be a defining stage for him. One, like good or bad, he could actually like come out if you're thinking marketing dollars. And if you pull your team down to get them to the quarterfinals, to the semis, and you're the leader of the American squad, that I think there's a lot of pressure there too.
Yeah.
And this isn't to win it necessarily. It's to have a good World Cup, right?
It's to have a good World Cup.
Yeah.
Did you guys see that volley, by the way, by Anthony Robinson? Holy smokes. That helps to alleviate a little bit of that pressure. We saw a little like a Ronaldinho-esque move from Berhalter.
Who was it? Well, I think it was our boy, Hercules Gomez. Yeah. I think it was him on Twitter.
Yeah.
Said, look at the move by Ronaldinho. Oh, on second viewing, it's actually Berhalter.
that's right. And then it did go out of bounds. So I think that's important to contextualize. But still, there's an audacity and I think a quality to this U.S. men's national team roster that we can't overlook. They all have to get on the same page, especially as their coach and Pochettino. But I think they do have the individual moments of brilliance that could see them through perhaps a deep run.
Hey, a positive take for the U.S. men's national team.
Wonga, do you think they really have the pressure, though, the U.S.
I do. I do, because, look.
American team or a European team?
Yes, I do, because you're playing at home. There's so much going on around this World Cup, and so much of it is about FIFA and the locations and transportation and water bottles and all of these things that kind of conflate into one to create a larger pressure, which is we're under the spotlight. We haven't had a great run up. Their coach Pochettino has like kind of slagged guys here and there. But if the U.S. can kind of coalesce, come together and have a deep run, I think that's a lot of pressure for them. I do.
You think anybody shows up to SoFi? Weren't all of the workers rumored to be striking?
Oh, my God.
What a surprise. Yeah. Surprise, surprise. A union comes out the week before a big event and says, we're going to strike now.
Well, with ice all around the stadium, I certainly feel for a lot of those workers, right? And they'd be terrified to show up to just work their job.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is that going to be
up
when push comes to shove, so to speak? Sorry, that's an inappropriate phrase to use. But do you think ice is going to be an issue once the games kick off, actually?
Yes.
Because often these things go away, right? The minute the ball is kicked, all the news starts, it goes away. I think there's enough news down there waiting for this stuff to cover it that it won't go away, but you do wonder.
Tempest in a teapot. I think that's what this is. This is going to be one of the weirdest news, like off-the-pitch news tournaments we'll ever see. I mean, you know, we've seen the ones in Russia where the touring fans got in fights and all that kind of stuff. I think this is going to be a little more international where, I mean, we just had an Iraqi player spend 8 hours in detention, in custom border detention, trying to get across the border with his visa, with, because he had the same name as somebody else. And, you know, this is kind of unacceptable stuff. Mm-hmm. These are all players that should have been cleared, referees not being allowed. I mean, what are we doing here? I mean, these are cleared players. Everyone's basically famous. You can check on who they are as they come across the border. Yeah.
Yeah, we'll see. Let me, fingers crossed, you wouldn't have to experience that. But I think you're right. There's more to this than we've heard already. It's brutal. Okay, almost out of time here. But I know each day we want to have a little fun wager. Okay? And just see where the money is, perhaps, in this World Cup. If you are prone to the odd little bet here and there, which occasionally we are.
Are you ready?
Yes, sir.
DJ Mello D.
It's 40 picks. It's 40 picks. It's 40 picks. On 40 prime.
Thank you, DJ Mello D, otherwise known as Danny.
Yo.
All right. So I've got a little futures bet here, looking ahead, because it's the week of. Looking about who's going to win and who might get the golden boot. No parlay here, right? Mm-hmm. If you think Spain are going to win and Erling Haaland of Norway gets the golden boot, plus 10,000. Yeah, so $5 wins you $505 on BetMGM.
Mm.
And I tell you what, I don't think Norway are going to win the World Cup, but they're a dark horse. They could go a long way. And if they do, it's going to be on the strength of Erling Haaland's goals, most probably. And Spain winning, that's not a stretch.
Mm-mm.
Tasty? What do you think?
I think so. Worthy of an overbite.
But anything to do with Erling Haaland, right? Like, if they go deep, he's got a chance. And like you said, they are a dark horse.
Yeah.
And you can win the golden boot in the group phase.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess you could. Especially with the way that he bags goals. He bags goals in numbers, right? He'll get hot. Yeah.
He could leave with six in the first stage, right?
Yeah, exactly.
He could. Like, it's not out of his norm, right? With two hat tricks in a row or something.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, bear in mind, though, it's, I guess, extra round of knockout games in this World Cup, right? So the deeper you go, the opportunity is there. But Norway is very much a dark horse team, which we'll get to later this week. I think we'll decide who our dark horse picks are and all sorts of that.
Dark horse. We also, we'll be talking about Bosnia Herzegovina a little more, because if I were Bosnia Herzegovina, I'm saying that correctly, I think.
You're adding an A at the end of it.
Yeah, but I like that because it's but if I were Switzerland or Qatar, I'd be listening to Footy Prime. That's what I would be doing. So for all of those expats who want to send information home to your national teams, send them our link. Tell them to listen to SiriusXM at 2 p.m. Every single day, every weekday during the tournament. How about that?
Every day of the tournament, we're going to be up on Footy Prime and on SiriusXM Canada Talks. It's a lot. We're going to hate each other by the end of this. Hopefully you won't hate us. So thank you for our inaugural attempt of a show on SiriusXM. We'll chat to you same time, same place tomorrow. Bye-bye.
Well, we're supposed to be doing about 40 seconds more of our charms.
I thought it was 58.10.
Star wipe.
Oh, is it? Okay. And Star wipe. See, it was going so well. I crushed it to 58.
But what you can do is follow us on all of our socials, Footy Prime. We're across all of the social media. Please, we just passed YouTube's 4,000 subscriber mark.
Mm-hmm.
Dubs has been doing some promotion at the back end of our podcast.
That's where I like to do my
really
promotion.
Worked.
That's right.
So we'll talk to you tomorrow.
Bye-bye. Cheers for listening.
Footy Prime is brought to you by BetMGM. Make it legendary.
Check us out on YouTube at youtube.com/footyprime and subscribe. Leave us some comments. We'd love to hear those. And check us out on Instagram at footyprimeig and on Twitter at footy_prime. And check out wearefootyprime.com. Sign up for our newsletter.
Nice job. That was great. I've got to go now, guys.